right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce. Not joined today by my notorious compadre, Mr. Brendan Veman. He is off to the races. He's got a whole lot going on today and was unable to make it. But hey, more for me. More for me. I'm excited to be able to have Greg Taylor all to myself. We get to pick his brain here on the Crypto 101 Podcast. He is the Chief Investment Officer of Purpose Investment. Greg, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Thanks for having me. It's exciting times in crypto and everywhere, it seems like.
Yeah, we are on the kind of riding the tailwinds of the launch of the first US-based spot Bitcoin ETFs. That was just a crazy last 6 months, ever since BlackRock kind of announced they were launching it. And then it was like, you know, all these public filings that were coming out day after day after day, everybody was like all of a sudden an expert on ETF filings and was an expert on you know, fund flows and all this kind of stuff. But you're actually a real expert. I mean, you're not just a Twitter armchair expert. You've been doing ETFs for years and years. You've been at the helm of a Canadian-based a fund called Purpose Investment that we're going to dive into. But before we dive into that, let's catch up on who you are, Greg. You know, even before crypto, what were you doing and what brought you into this market?
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
Yeah, thanks very much. So I'm Greg Taylor, the CIO of Purpose Investments. I've been a Toronto-based company, and I've been working in Bay Street, which is Canada's version of Wall Street, for a little over 20 years. Started off managing growth equities up here in Canada, and growth equities in Canada kind of are a bit of an oxymoron because you start with the resource sector, then we had that glimmer where Research in Motion and Nortel were big tech players, and then you go back to commodities, and then running growth funds. We even had the fun a few years ago managing cannabis, as that was a big growth industry in Canada for a while. Though it's had a bit of a tough time in the last few weeks, but or a few years, and we'll see if that affects anything at all. But also, Canada is notorious for launching new industries and different things and being a little further out the risk spectrum. And I think Canada is kind of doing that because we come from a resource-based background, that there's a lot of the Canadian capital markets are set up to finance junior mining and junior gold companies. So there's a bit more of a risk tolerance to startups. And with that, we've also gotten the reputation, or at least we're able to have the stamp of approval of a few years ago launching the world's first crypto ETF. And that's really what Purpose is bringing to the table. And I've been, my background coming from managing growth equities makes it so it's suitable to this and try and figure out what's next. And we'll see what the next evolution of growth in Canada comes after this.
That's awesome. And so if we were to kind of boil down the purpose or the mission of Purpose Investment, what would you say it is?
Well, the big thing that we've tried to do, and there's a lot of ETF providers out there already, and Purpose it has been around for 10 years. We're around $19 billion of AUM currently.
Wow.
And when our chairman and founder, Sam Seif, who was at Claymore before that, which is now part of BlackRock, one of the things that they came out with was trying to really be a pioneer in the space and to evolve and to help advisors with new solutions. So when Purpose was started 10 years ago, it was not to be the basic ETFs of index funds. It was all about trying to work with advisors on solving problems that they had. And that can range from a lot of things. It's one ways of getting access to money market funds in a simple ETF wrapper. So we've launched some of those. It's getting access to high-grade investment bond funds, which we worked on. It's trying to bring hedge fund strategies, which people like, from options writing and private investments back to the masses. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we concentrate on, is working on solving problems advisors have been making it so that more sophisticated solutions come back to the market and we can put it into an ETF form so everyone can get access to it. And that's really what brought us to the crypto space, because we saw that there's a lot of people from the advisor community, but also from the retail market that it wanted exposure to crypto and were struggling through the nuances of how to do it. And we think that an ETF is always the best solution, or should be one of the best solutions for people. So that's where we set up, and we launched our first filing with the OSC, so the Ontario Securities Commission, back in 2017, trying to bring an ETF of crypto. At that point in time, the system wasn't ready for it, but we were able to launch the world's first spot Bitcoin ETF back in February of 2021. And so far, it's nice to see the Americans joining the party and catching up 3 years later.
No, it's so true. I mean, there's so many questions I have for Gary, but you're not Gary. Gensler, who's the head of SEC, who's just been dragging his feet, and I think political motivations and all sorts of speculation that we could dive into, but not worth it, okay? Because guess what? That's history. It's in the books now. Crypto guys win, and the rest is still being written. We've had, you know, lots of different flows and stuff. But yeah, it's just, you know, it is crazy to see how ahead of the curve Canada was. And like you said, it kind of might go back to just the very history of the founding of capital markets in the country compared to United States. You guys are much more tolerant with risk and you know, for the sake of growth.
Yeah. And that being said, well, I do agree that, and as I was mentioning, that Canada, I think, is more open to financing risk and financing areas that traditional finance doesn't want to go to, which is really the heart of financing junior resource companies, which is where we come from. But that being said, I think the best thing we can say is that our regulator didn't just say no. When we approached them and said back in 2017, we wanted to launch a crypto ETF, what they didn't approve it at that point in time. They didn't say go away and never talk to us again. It's come back when things are better and the ecosystem's improved. And that's what happened. So when we relaunched and refiled back in the summer of 2020, things were getting better. Like, that was still during the COVID period, so everyone's locked in their house working from home. But there's still a lot of innovation going on, and our regulator, to their credit, was willing to listen and say, yeah, the system's gotten a lot better. The ecosystem around crypto has improved dramatically. The exchanges are a lot better. There is some forms of regulation, and the system is ready. So we spend a ton of time working with the regulator on showing that things are getting better. This is something that's going to help improve people's lives and help them to invest. And to their credit, that's what they did. And they worked with us and approved it. And our fund, I'd say, has had a decent track record in the 3 years running. And I think that success has gone a long way to allowing the SEC to say, okay, fine. We should do this too, and this isn't something that we want to keep off the mainstream for any longer.
Yeah, you guys were quite literally 3 years ahead, almost to the day. You know, about 2 years and 11 months or something like that. But it's crazy. I mean, you know, you guys have been, you know, tracking the price of Bitcoin. It's been, you know, secure. Investors have loved it. It's been a liquid trading instrument, and that's just one of the, you know, trading instruments you have. Again, $19 billion under management. How much of that actually is in the Bitcoin purpose ETF?
So our crypto lineup would be around $3 billion of the AUM. The rest would be spread between equities, the fixed income, and the other alternative forms of assets. So crypto is just three of the 19, but it's something we want to keep growing and thinking it's an area that we have built a track record on being able to deliver and work with in the favor of our investors.
Yeah. And I want to dive into kind of what some of those other crypto ETFs that y'all have are, and kind of with the backdrop of, you know, we want to look to Canada to see where the puck might be going. And this isn't just like a hockey pun. This is, you guys, you know, we're 3 years ahead of the crypto, the Bitcoin ETF. Do you guys have other ETFs that might then indicate, hey, an Ethereum ETF might not be that far out, or some other more colorful, you know, indexes or ETFs that have many different cryptos? They might eventually be introduced into America, but let's hear about what you guys have.
Yeah, absolutely. So I can tell you exactly what we did. So after we launched our Bitcoin ETF, which was in early February of 2021, we immediately filed and had been filing previously with an Ethereum ETF. Same format, same structure, which we can get into later. And to that point of view, we did get approval to launch that in April of 2021. So roughly three-ish months after we launched the Bitcoin ETF, and Ethereum ETF was created. And that's had lesser demand, and it's probably pretty similar to the ratio between the size of the total market cap of Bitcoin versus Ethereum in that form. And I think there's still going to be a lot of optimism for Ethereum. And we've been seeing that as you look at the price, that once it kind of became obvious that the SEC was going to approve the Bitcoin ETF, the price of Bitcoin still went up, but even more so was the price of Ethereum, which really took off, I think, on this expectation that that's coming.
Yeah.
The other thing that we did after that is, in addition to when we launched our Bitcoin ETF, the stock exchange here that provides options markets launched options on our ETF. So this is just your normal, like you have an options on the spiders or the triple Qs or any or Apple stock that trades. So you can buy and sell calls on those funds. And one of the strategies that we started to notice that some smart hedge funds were doing is really harvesting this volatility. So we all know there's a lot of volatility in the crypto market. And so when the options market started to form around our ETF, we saw a number of people that would buy the ETF and then write calls on it out about a month. So that's called a covered call strategy. So what you're doing is you're selling the option premium of a higher price. And if it never gets there, you basically got another income. So we took the stance about 6 months after we launched both our Ethereum and Bitcoin ETFs to launch Bitcoin and Ethereum yield funds. So these trade like ETFs up in Canada, still track the underlying, but they also get a monthly income. So we harvest that volatility by writing calls and up to 50% of them. And right now, and the yield will vary depending on the volatility, but the Ethereum fund yields around 15%. The Bitcoin fund yields 12%. So you're able to track the underlying to a certain degree, but you also get a nice monthly income. So that's the evolution that we had in Canada. And certainly we're looking at whether we launch other crypto assets in a pure coin. There's a lot of talk about Solana or some of the other coins out there. So we'll see if the ecosystem and the demand is there for that. But I think the natural step you're going to see is Ethereum and then maybe some of these alternative strategies, whether it's a yield product or something else on the risk arb type front.
That's incredible. I know that there's always a lot of questions around yield, kind of where it comes from, how it's being, kind of passed on to the end user. And we don't need to get too much into the weeds. You're a CIO and we're, crypto 101. So we want to kind of know, what does that look like? If I were to buy one of these, I was going to say one of these tokens, but one of these ETFs, and it has a yield component built in. So I own the Bitcoin, but I also earn like a dividend. Kind of where does that come from? How can I expect to maybe like account for that?
So it'll be taxed in Canada as capital gain, but it'll look on your account like a dividend comes out. So it's paid on a monthly basis where we pay out the income, but it's at least by the Canadian tax code taxed as capital gain because it's you're harvesting the capital gain and not taking it as a dividend. But it is something that you'd be buying it as a regular ETF, and then you track the underlying to the best you can, and then you're generating the income and paying it out on a monthly basis to the account holder's account.
That's very cool. I know that there's a bunch of kind of crypto tokens and stuff that are starting to do that. There's one called Ribbon Finance, and they have all sorts of different vaults where you could contribute to a vault. And it kind of sounds exactly like what you guys are doing, covered call strategies and stuff. So it's just incredible to see all the different levels of innovation. But I want to kind of tie this back to what's really hot in the news, which is this ETF in America. There's nine of them that all launched all at once. And then I think there was the Grayscale one that kind of converted. So maybe there's 10 or 11 of these things now. What's the big deal? Like, why did this get so much media attention? Why is if these already existed for 3 years, they're in a bunch of different countries, why this? Why now? Why does it matter?
Well, I think it's really going to matter because, as we all know, the American retail market is probably the biggest form of the pool of investors in the world. And I think that's really all it is. It comes back to supply and demand. And this, all things being created equal, should make it easier for the average American retail investor to get exposure to crypto. There's been other ways to get it in the past, whether it's the Grayscale Fund, which you referenced, There was a futures-based ETF, which we can talk about also, that was launched a few years ago, which there's a lot of things that people have problems with futures-based ETFs. We can leave that for another topic. But this really, a pure spot-backed Bitcoin ETF, is, for all intents and purposes, the purest way to get access to the underlying commodity. And this makes it so much easier than, and I don't have to tell you or your audience about how a traditional person would go and buy Bitcoin or any coin for that matter, opening up a crypto exchange, dealing with a crypto trading party, figuring out if it's a cold or a hot wallet you're going to store it in, making sure you don't lose your keys. Like all
it's these. It's daunting, it's complex.
And for a lot of people, they just don't want to do that. And then we don't even want to open the Pandora's box of if you want to be above board and file taxes and make sure you're doing that all correctly.
Right.
So having it in an ETF, this makes it so much easier for everyone to get exposure for that. They can hold it in their normal Charles Schwab or whoever account you have. You can sometimes get margin off it if your broker's set up to have a margin account so you can borrow against it. And it's just so much easier from a reporting point of view. Your advisors, if you're using one, can see your total portfolio with all your stocks, your bonds, and your crypto exposure. So it's just so much simpler that I think that's where the excitement is. That for all those people that are thinking about looking at crypto and didn't know how to do it in the past, this opens up that door. So this is a pure demand function. And we all know the supply of Bitcoin is basically regimented out for the next 100 plus years. And this is something that's not going to change. So this should be bringing in more buyers. And the hope is going to be that when demand goes up and supply stays fixed, then you're going to see prices go higher. And I think that's where the excitement really comes in.
Yeah. So many things to touch on there. With Bitcoin being an asset, you know, I saw Larry Fink on TV the day after the Bitcoin ETF launched, and he's, you know, 30-minute kind of one-on-one, I think a squawk on the street or something like that, and just talking about like his conversion from a crypto hater. And we've all seen those things where he's like, oh, Bitcoin's an index for money laundering, and you know, only bad people use it. And then he said 3 years ago, it hit him when he started to learn about tokenization, and you could have all the world's assets on kind of a unified ledger, this accounts-based system. And you know, he kind of goes on and talks about this real-world asset tokenization. And he says he's so bullish on where this is going. When you kind of think about it from that standpoint, you have that. He's one of the most powerful men in finance. Then you have the guy, which I should know his name, the CEO of Vanguard, takes the complete opposite stance and says, there's nothing valuable about crypto. In fact, I'm not going to allow anybody to buy these Bitcoin or crypto-related products through Vanguard, you know, which is also crazy. But like, do you see also kind of where he's coming from? Do you think he's just, you know, fell off the turnip truck? You know, kind of how do you kind of rationalize both of these two different viewpoints in your mind?
Well, and that's the big debate, and that's a whole other hour segment. But there's, I think there's a bunch of things that happened in the last few years, we all know the volatility. But I think at the end of the day, it's actually probably good for the crypto market at the end, because like we came out of the COVID lockdowns, and the way that we basically got through that is there was so much money printing. Every government started just blowing up their balance sheet to pay people to stay home and put them on stimulus programs. We had central banks lower interest rates to zero and basically double the size of their balance sheet overnight. And I think that opened up the door for a lot of people to say, wait a minute, why are all my assets in something that's backed by a fiat currency that people can just double the supply of overnight? And I think that got people to say, well, do I really want to have everything backed by a dollar, or would I rather have some part of my assets that are backed by, we'll use the term real assets. And we're starting to see through traditional finance, more people talk about portfolio theory of looking at your asset mix, not just equities and fixed income, but including a bucket of real assets. And that includes real estate and gold or different other commodities. So that sleeve has gotten more attention in the last little bit, as people want something that's not correlated to money printing. And within that sleeve, I think there's some segment are saying, well, do I really want gold, or do I want something more that's modern? And that's where I think the whole cryptocurrency comes in, and more finance guys that are looking at this traditional are saying, well, wait a minute, should I look at this? It's only been around 15 years, but still it's gotten a lot of attention. We know the market cap of Bitcoin, and it's not going away anytime soon. And so I think that's starting to change the narrative. People are saying, well, maybe I need something more in that real asset bucket. Do I really want to hold gold, which some people like? And I'll admit, I think gold has a place in people's portfolio. But maybe some people want something more modern, and Bitcoin could be one of the areas to get access to it. The other thing, which I think really might have been messy and volatile for a lot of people, but the collapse of the exchanges last year, I think is going to turn out to be a positive. And I know that doesn't reassure people that lost money and lost their coins, but at the end of the day, it was becoming a bit of the Wild West. And there were a lot of bad actors in there, and that had to go away. And we needed a little more regulation to make this more mainstream. It was messy, and we saw a lot of problems. But I think coming out the other side with more regulation involved some of the bad actors out of there, this is going to prove out to be a pretty positive thing for the whole ecosystem, as it had to mature. It had to go through that messy period. And coming out the door, I think you're going to find things healthier, and some degree of regulation is going to be positive for the overall space.
Yeah, man, couldn't agree more. In so many kind of interesting touch points there, but I want to kind of harken back to what you were talking about, just with your macro sort of thoughts about inflation and interest rates, and kind of the landscape. You touched on it. I'm just, you know, kind of curious. And again, nothing that we say on this show is ever construed as financial advice or investment advice. But we just like to get your thoughts, and we like to get educated on how smart people are thinking about the future. And if you kind of look at Q1 coming up, I mean, what can we expect? What are you kind of anticipating, or what's the outlook for the crypto market?
Well, I think I'll speak a little more of the broader market, and then I can kind of touch on the crypto market in general. But I think the broader market is going to be a volatile year. We all know what last year did with the NASDAQ up 50% and such, and led by the strength of NVIDIA and Microsoft and a lot of these giant tech companies. I think 2024 is going to be a bit more of a sorting out period. Everyone's been worried about a recession in the US. It seems to be something that we've talked about for 18 months and it hasn't arrived. This could be a year that might start to shape up in the second half of the year, but we all know that heading into U.S. elections, strange things happen, and they kind of kick down recessions down the road, because no one wants a recession while they're in office. So might not be the year you get a recession in the U.S., but it does feel like it's going to be a lot of volatility. Earnings growth may slow for the overall market. And I think you are definitely going to start to see central banks start to cut rates. We went through the most aggressive hiking cycle in history over the last 2 years. And I think now that they're starting to see that that's gone a little too far and inflation has pulled back, so you're going to start seeing cutting rates. Where that could tie into the crypto market, again, is back in this real asset category. Because one thing that has happened in the last few years with the aggressive rate hikes by the U.S. central banks, that has really put a lot of emphasis on the strength of the U.S. dollar. So the U.S. dollar has gone up basically against all currencies. If you have any Japanese friends or listeners, the Japanese yen has collapsed, the euro is under pressure, the pound's under pressure, and the U.S. dollar has really been the king currency for the last 10 plus years. With central banks starting to ease back, other parts of the world might start to recover a little bit. You could start to see some weakness in the U.S. dollar versus some of these other peers. And again, when almost going back to the way most people look when they trade gold, when the U.S. dollar goes down in value, real assets go up in value. So if you're starting to look at crypto and Bitcoin in particular as something that's an alternative to the U.S. dollar, it could start to do a little better in that point of view. So I'd expect more of a slower year from a macroeconomic point of view, verging on a recession later in the year, but it also could be with rate cuts more bearish for the U.S. dollar, which could be better for these real assets.
Yeah, you know, and it could time up well. You know, all those things. Yeah, I mean, it could time up well, kind of with this the Bitcoin halving cycle, which there's kind of been this 4-year theory. We've only had, you know, 3 data points to go off of, but it seems like every halving cycle, it typically tops out, right? The Bitcoin price tops out about 15 months or 18 months after, which would kind of line us up right in the beginning of 2026. So who knows? Maybe the recession comes then.
Well, and could all line up again with just going back to supply demand, because the halving will take away some supply, or at least slow the pace again. And if we do have this bold scenario that bringing on the US ETF brings more demand in, so you're kind of lining up a slowdown of the pace of supply with the potentially the biggest investor base looking at it. And that could, I don't want to give predictions, but that's usually a formula for hire.
And it, yeah, exactly. And it could be big. I mean, I think it's one of those things like, you know, the immediate impact was, there's a lot to go here, but the immediate impact was sell the news, right? Because it kind of just, a lot of people were front running it. People positioned, opened up longs, bought in anticipation. I think the price of Bitcoin went up from about 26,000 up to around, you know, 49,000 by the time it launched. Right. And so there was a lot of, you know, of that baked in. So now it, you know, it traded back down to around 40. So it, the short-term impact was a little bit of the sell the news, but if you think about the long-term impact and you zoom way out, I mean, if you remember back in March when there was this regional banking crisis, everything was selling off, correlations to one, Bitcoin caught this bid that was just crazy, right? And everybody was kind of waking up to this idea like, holy shit, like the banks might not have the money, but if we go to Bitcoin, it was just the perfect narrative. It was super sweet. And people just, you know, went, you know, the spot bid on Bitcoin went limit up. And I think it was because that narrative, that mindset, the mentality of like, if it could happen in America, that banks could fail and not have your money, it could happen anywhere. In fact, it is happening places. And there is, you know, Balaji's, you know, big whole bet that the whole world, you know, this sovereign debt bubble was collapsing, all this stuff. And that's always been a thing. But I think the idea here with the Bitcoin ETF, now people can just with the click of a button, take their portfolio and turn it from stocks and bonds directly into Bitcoin. And they don't have to go and set up a Coinbase account. They don't have to have all this thought that could get in their way of making an investment decision. They can now have it on the same terminal in the same account, margin it, all that kind of stuff. So the it's a latent potential that this Bitcoin ETF has just unlocked. And now it's up to the people to kind of open the door. But as you know, Bitcoin thrives off of all this fear or this all these narratives, right? And so it's going to be so much easier to buy. This is going to be huge. I just can't be excited. I mean, I'm sure you share a lot of the same excitement, but and how big can this get? I mean, you know, what orders of magnitude could we be talking about in terms of, you know, demand?
Yeah, and there's a lot of things you can do with that, but I agree. I wouldn't get caught up in the short-term nature of this at all. It's to me, this is one of those classic finance trading things of a sell the news. Like how many times have you ever seen something rally into a news that's supposed to be positive? It hits the headline and it goes down. And we've seen this you've seen this in the commodity markets for hundreds of years. So this to me, it just, again, maybe it's more of a stamp of approval. It's acting like every other commodity that runs into a headline and you get it and it falls. So I wouldn't worry about the short-term nature. I wouldn't worry if it dropped back below 40,000. It doesn't mean it's over. It doesn't mean it's not demand. It's just, we're in this society that everything has to be instantaneous. And the fact that it didn't double overnight, it isn't something we should worry about. But it does feel like, again, this brings it more mainstream. It brings on more demand. It brings on more buyers. And you're going to get more people watching it. And they may not say, oh, I'm going to buy it today, but they could say, hey, I'm going to watch all these ETFs, how they trade for the next year and see. And if it happens, maybe I'm going to start allocating a little bit more to my portfolio. And one analogy that I've heard a few people mention, and again, it keeps going back to gold. And again, this maybe it's a real asset thing, but the gold ETFs really came out in the early 2000s. So the first U.S. gold ETF, I believe the GLD, came in 2004. Prior to that, like you could always buy gold. You'd have to go to a jeweler or go to the bank and buy a coin and find the bar.
Put it in your safe deposit.
Yeah, and figure where you're going to bury it in your backyard and make sure you can remember where it is. And and again, that's not something that really fits into the traditional finance model either. But bringing the gold ETFs on really started to make it more mainstream. And these gold ETFs now are multiple hundred billions of dollars, and that brought in more demand. And that definitely made it so people can get access to gold in their portfolio the way they couldn't before. So you can use that as your analogy again for Bitcoin. Some of the knock-on effects though were really interesting when you go back and look at that time. Prior to that, if you looked at the gold companies, if you want exposure to gold, you actually had to buy stock in the gold miners. So the gold mining companies, and they traded at huge valuations. They traded at, I'm probably using too much technical terms here, but 2 to 3 times net asset value. So higher multiple than what they're worth. As soon as those gold ETFs got launched, over time, they started to trade at to net asset value then below, because there wasn't a need for the premium, because you could actually go back and just buy the commodity to get exposure to it. So
In fact, there was a lot of operational risk with those miners too. So it should actually trade at a discount.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not an easy business, and to credit to the miners that can actually do it, and they should get a premium, but not everyone. So it'll be interesting to see just from a knock-on effect in the crypto world of how these other derivative plays work. Like we've got some pretty big valuations, some of the Bitcoin miners out there that may not get that scarcity value. What about some of the other crypto related equities? And they had gotten a bit of a scarcity value because they were the only game in town. But now people might say, well, maybe I should just look at the coins and getting the direct exposure through the ETF versus taking on operational and equity risk with some of these other companies. So something to watch. And I think there's going to be a lot of lessons you can take from looking at how that gold ETF traded and how it evolved, because it's only been 20 years ago, but I think there's some pretty good parallels.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes me just think about how, how the miners are going to survive the halving, and even how, a company like MicroStrategy now fares kind of in competition with all these other ETFs. I think about Coinbase, kind of, they're custodying all these assets and they're making fees, but in a sense, well, if people are going to now, trade the ETF, are they going to need to, trade on Coinbase? Like maybe in some way it backfires.
A lot of questions. Yeah.
A lot of questions, but we don't have enough time for all those. But what I do have time to ask you is just kind of in a general sense, if there's a person who's a listener to Crypto 101 and they're just kind of starting to break into the industry, how do they think about allocating like kind of a personal portfolio to crypto? And do you have any general numbers that you kind of have seen as a market standard, or how do you think about that?
So I would keep going back to, again, the real asset allocation, because I think there's definitely a place for portfolio theory. So the core of your assets should be in liquid large cap with equities and fixed income is kind of the core. And then it's trying to figure out around the edges where you can find some niche sources of exposure that'll fit your risk tolerance and risk profile. So traditional sense is gold should be between 3-5% of your portfolio. Crypto probably shouldn't be that different for most people, but everyone's different. Everyone's in a different phase of their life. Some will take on more risk if they're able to. And I think this is something that is more of a personal decision than just a generalization of how much people should put into crypto.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody's got to do their own research and find what works for them. Get with your financial planners. My last question for you is, what's next for Purpose? I'm just curious, any new products, any new big announcements that you could release to us?
Well, we want to make sure that we still keep our leadership stake in crypto. Purpose has a lot of exposure through fixed income and equities and other areas. Crypto has been an interesting development for us, and I think an area that has gone fairly well as well. And we're happy with what we've done to make it for a lot of investors, both retail and institution, to access to it. So we want to keep with these funds. I think the track record speaks for itself that it has done what it's supposed to do over the last 3 years of trading basically at NAV and with a fairly tight bid-ask spread, and also offering lots of liquidity, as we've had days of up to 500 million of trading volume. And I think that's something we want to keep building off of. So we want to keep going back to trying to find ways for retail investors to get access to sophisticated markets. Crypto is absolutely one of those. So we want to figure out what we can do to keep our leadership, work with our regulators, and try and bring new products to the average investor that will help them and hopefully get followed by the Americans 3 years later.
Incredible. Greg, thank you so much for coming on to the show, for giving us a glimpse into the future. And we hope to have you back on again soon. You let us know when you're around, and happy to have another conversation. A lot more questions, but until then, stay warm.
Yeah, thanks very much. Have a good day.
Yep, you bet. All right, everybody who's listening at home, thanks for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day, and come back same time, same place next week. More amazing guests.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.